Welcome to Talking Tax on Think Tech Hawaii. Companies big and small care about state taxes, and today our guest is from an organization representing a lot of the big ones. We'll be back in just a minute. Good morning. This is Tom Yamachika, President of the Tax Foundation of Hawaii. Jay Fidel has the day off. So you're stuck with me for this show, but that's okay because we have a great guest today. He's going to be talking about a national perspective on state taxation. His name is Patrick Reynolds. He is one of the senior state tax counsels over at the Committee on State Taxation, or COST. So, Pat, why don't you tell us a little bit about what cost is and what you do? Not
Sure.
necessarily that order.
No, that's fine. Thanks for having me today here, Tom, and at the Council on State Taxation. So we are a nonprofit trade industry group, and our members consist of approximately 500 or so of the largest multi-jurisdictional businesses in the U.S. And our mission is to preserve and to promote the equitable and non-discriminatory taxation of those businesses. In other words, we are not one of the organizations that says we want no tax. We are an organization that says that we want fair, transparent, and non-discriminatory taxation of those businesses.
Okay, and has your work involved Hawaii at all?
Yes, it has. Our senior tax counsel that covers Hawaii unfortunately couldn't be here today. So you get stuck with me, but we have covered Hawaii quite a bit. What we do on a daily basis, Tom, kind of falls within three buckets. So first of all, we have quite a robust educational component. So we put on approximately 4 or 5 national conferences per year. A couple of tax schools per year, as you know from being in the state and local tax world. State and local tax is not necessarily taught at all colleges, so we put on a school for the employees of our businesses to attend and learn about state taxation. And then we also have probably in a pre-COVID environment, right around 30 or so regional one-day meetings scattered throughout the country. And in a post-COVID environment, I think we're sitting right at about 15. This year, we're hoping to make it up to about 20 maybe of those regional in-person meetings. So that's bucket number one, our educational component. Bucket number two is our judicial advocacy component. So we regularly weigh in with amicus briefs in major state tax cases across the country, usually at the state Supreme Court level or the U.S. Supreme Court level. And then finally, we have our legislative advocacy. So we weigh in on legislation that goes on in the states and in localities. And we either weigh in favor of the legislation or oppose the legislation. There are things going on in Hawaii that we have weighed in opposition, and we're hoping to get some measures introduced in Hawaii that we could weigh in and support, because there's plenty of opportunity to improve Hawaii's tax structure.
Okay, so can you give us some examples of what you're following this year or what your colleagues are following this year in here in Hawaii?
Sure. So one of them that immediately comes to mind is Hawaii SB 986, which would require mandatory worldwide combined reporting for corporate income tax purposes. This is a concept that we think would be out of step, not only with the rest of the country, but the rest of the world. So if you're familiar with corporate income taxes, or if your audience is familiar with them, they know that that states that impose corporate income tax usually do so in one of two ways: either one, separate reporting, wherein each individual entity reports the income of that particular entity on a separate company basis. And the other way is unitary combined reporting, where a group of related corporations is treated as one taxpayer. All intercompany transactions are eliminated, and they pay tax on that group basis. But in the states that impose that, all of them currently provide what's called either initially they provide a water's edge election, or the tax is based on a water's edge group to start with.
And Water's Edge being just those entities or those businesses confined to the United States, right?
Correct.
Okay, yeah, that's what we have right now. And that legislation you mentioned, nobody gave it the time of day. It didn't even pass out of the first committee. So that looks pretty good from your standpoint, I guess.
Yes, we are glad that that has happened, and that does not have much in terms of legs or chances of success. But it's not the only state where we've seen it pop up this year. New Hampshire had a little bit of talk that they may be taking a closer look at that, and we've heard it being brought up verbally in some other jurisdictions, but so far, no state has adopted mandatory worldwide combined reporting.
Yeah, now didn't California come close, or did they just kind of punt with a Water's Edge election?
Yeah, California has always had the water's edge election, Tom, so I don't think that they have come close to it either.
Okay, great. So, one of the things that cost also does is they rate individual state tax systems the most. When I went to costs webpage this morning, the one thing that popped up was the 2022 cost sales tax scorecard. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Did you
Yes.
write it? Did you
I
write it?
was not one of the principal authors, but I am familiar with it. Yes.
Okay, great. And what happened in the state tax scorecard? Can you tell me how the process went? I will say, for our viewers that Hawaii did a little bit better than I thought they were going to do. We got a D.
Right. So what we do is we kind of analyze the state's tax law up against a series of very objective criteria. And based on whether or not the law meets those criteria or not, we assign points to those various criteria, and then we add up all of the points and we assign a letter grade at the end of the day. Certain examples of what some of those criteria are. So one of the big ones for us is the taxation of business inputs. We think that there should be an exemption there, or business to business transactions, something that is consumed in a manufacturing process or used, because we feel that the ideal consumption tax or sales tax should be taxing end user consumption. That is consistent with all of the VAT jurisdictions around the world. The VAT jurisdictions have an input tax credit, so they only tax the final consumption. And in the United
And
States,
by
we're a little
VAT,
bit.
you mean value added tax, right? I mean, which is what we see in a number of countries,
That's right.
but not, not so much here in the United States.
That's correct. The value-added tax is the consumption tax that most of the rest of the world has adopted, except for the United States. The United States does have a subnational sales and use tax, so state and local sales and use taxes. And in those sales and use taxes, they subject a significant portion of that tax base is borne by businesses. And so we outline specifics with respect to the business inputs. For example, cable services, wired services, either the both the taxation of the equipment that those businesses use to provide those services, as well as the user consumption at the back end, are both taxable. And that creates what we call a pyramiding effect. And what that pyramiding does at the end of the day is it basically means that the ultimate true tax rate of that consumption tax, it loses its transparency both to consumers as well as legislators.
Yeah, and I guess the reason is because you have tax being imposed, and then it's being sold to another business, and the tax is imposed again when it's sold to another business, and tax is imposed again when it's sold to a consumer. So you can get like multiple layers when that happens. I mean, we used to be much worse at that. We're still horrible. When judged against that criterion, we famously do tax business-to-business transactions. The only saving grace is that we tax them at a lower rate. So we have a wholesale rate of a 0.5%, which is, a bit lower than the retail rate of 4% plus the county surcharge. So it's a little bit of help, but not much. So, not surprisingly, Hawaii got a bad score for that particular criterion. But it looks like we got hammered in several places, but we weren't the worst. The worst on the list were Colorado, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and South Carolina. What is it with those states that makes them so horrible?
Well, so certainly one of the biggest items there is the local administration of taxes. So in Colorado, Louisiana, and Alabama specifically, they have a completely different administration at the local level than they do for the state level. And one of the items within our scorecard is the central administration of a sales tax. So we feel that that even if you can still have local taxes, but they should all be administered at a central level, preferably at the state. So you're taxing the same products at the state level that you are at the local level. There's a uniform return. There's a uniform audit. Any sort of interpretations like revenue rulings, et cetera, are applicable both to that state level as well as that local level. So that's one of the biggest items that causes that discrepancy.
Yeah, so like in those states, you have counties, you have parishes, you have school districts, you have mosquito abatement districts, a number of little mini jurisdictions that each can impose tax with their own rules, and it's I guess much more horrible if you've got all of these independent jurisdictions with their independent rules, and it's probably worse if if the state says this is exempt, and counties A, B, and C, and it says no, it's subject to tax, and counties D, E, and F say, oh yeah, it's exempt too. So yeah, keeping track of 50 or 100 different jurisdictional rules is much worse than tracking just one, which is I guess fortunately what we have here. We have, of course, county surcharges, but they're necessarily applied with pretty much the same rules as the base general excise tax. So I guess that's what helped us in our rankings. That's why we only got a D instead of an F.
Yeah, and Tom, you may have some history on this too, but one of the criteria used in our sales tax scorecard is whether or not the state is a member of the Streamlined Sales and Use Tax Agreement. And I know Hawaii is not, but I didn't know if you had any history on why it is not or what the big hurdles are to get Hawaii to become part of that streamlined group.
Well, one of the big problems that Hawaii has is that one of the rules in streamlined sales tax is you only have to have, I mean, you can only have one rate per state. And we have our wholesale rate, which is a second rate. And we had discussions, and there was proposed legislation about carving off the wholesale rate into a separate tax chapter, but to sort of quote unquote be in compliance with the streamline rules, but really that was just window dressing, and really nobody thought that was real compliance with the rules, so that I think contributed to where we are.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
Gotcha.
our main problem, I think, is that the general excise tax that we have is totally unlike many of the taxes that you call sales taxes in many different ways. It just has a lot of history behind that. Have you all done similar studies on income tax?
We don't have a separate income tax scorecard. So we currently have four scorecards. We have our sales tax scorecard, our property tax scorecard, an unclaimed property scorecard. Although unclaimed property is not a tax, that is something our members follow quite closely. And then the oldest and most long-running scorecard that we have is our administrative scorecard. And that has a lot of criteria on it that we think are just good, solid, good government type of deals. Like you should have even-handed interest rates. Interest at the end of the day is just compensation for the time value of money. So whether it's an overpayment or an underpayment, we think that there should be an application of the same rate.
We flunked that one.
You flunked that one, but there's some things that you do well too. And so even-handed statute of limitations. So the statute of limitations for refund claims and assessments should be the same. And it is in Hawaii. So we think that that is good. But there's always room for improvement. One of the ones that I was hoping to bring up on in terms of room for improvement there is the 1 month extension after the federal due date. It's one of we play defense a lot at cost and oppose bills, but we certainly support bills. And one of the things that we go on offense regarding is with respect to that 1 month extension. And I don't think Hawaii is in bad off shape as some of the other states, but this kind of got all bounced out of whack a few years ago when the IRS changed the due date of the corporate income tax return at the federal level, and they moved it from March 15th to April 15th. And a lot of states had it due 1 month afterwards. Now, Hawaii's, unless I'm mistaken, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is due like April 20th, right?
That's right.
So it only has maybe 5 days after. But we think that having a state return due 1 month after the federal return due date, including any sort of automatic extension, and at the federal level, you can get an automatic 6 month extension. We think that's just good government and makes common sense. Certainly, it is not an extension of time to pay the return. Or pay the tax that is due. This is just simply an extension of time to file the return, and this gives companies plenty of time to make sure that they're getting their state returns done after the federal returns are done. And we think that 1 month extension is just kind of a good government bill idea to have in your back pocket there.
Sure. Like when I was in, my accounting firm, I used to work at PricewaterhouseCoopers a long time ago. We would normally prepare state returns at the same time as the federal return because it came out of the same software. So at least in theory, if you had, practitioners like ours all over the country, and I think, we might not be duplicable, but the software is. What's the problem with having a due date that's only 5 days later if the returns pop out at the same time anyway?
Well, I guess some companies are better at having all of those returns pop out at the same time than others. I used to work at Pricewaterhouse as well prior to the merger with Coopers, and did my fair share of tax returns there. And I may be dating myself a little bit, but I know there's still some work to be done at the end of the day. Once you get that federal return done, to have it translate down to the state returns.
Yeah, I mean, definitely you have to know how much of your, I mean, especially for big companies, you need to know how much of that income was earned where. The bigger the company you got, the tougher that calculation is. If you got a company that's only in one state, then it's pretty easy. But for I guess your members, and tell me some of the members' end costs so we can get an idea of how big they are.
Well, so we don't have a public list of who our members are, Tom. So, but
Oh,
if you
okay.
think of it's roughly 500 or so of the largest multi-jurisdictional. So if you think of most of the Fortune 500, roughly, I mean that's our membership.
Okay, so we're talking about big companies that have operations in pretty much every state. So yeah, for those companies, there would be lots of additional steps to do state returns after you do the federal.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So you say you do property tax too? What do you all think of Hawaii's property tax structure? If you know.
That's not my forte, Tom, and I know enough to be dangerous in the property tax world. So if we want to do a deeper dive into property tax, I'd be happy to hook you up with our property tax expert in-house.
Great. Yeah, I mean the only thing that I know is that our real property tax rates are, comparatively very low, when compared against other U.S. states, primarily because the education system, the K-12 system, is funded at the state level, and
Gotcha.
is a, we have a state department doing that, and it's our general excise tax rather than the property tax that funds it. So people are always saying, "Hey, our property tax is so low, we ought to raise it." Where that logic comes from, I don't know, but
And Tom,
that's
it's
what's being
interesting
said.
that you mentioned rates because I get asked that question quite a bit. And one of the things that oddly enough we don't weigh in on a regular basis is with respect to rates, because we think that rates are a very transparent way to the taxpayer of either increasing or decreasing taxes. So out of all of our policy statements out there, you're not going to find one of them that has to deal with rates. So.
Great. Well, one of the things that's happening in our legislature this year is that our governor is making a big push to reform our tax brackets, our standard deduction amount, personal exemption amount, and so forth, and index it for inflation, which never has been done before. Do you folks at Cost view that as a positive development, or do you not really care because you're just more worried about corporate tax rates?
Well, we are a business tax organization, so we don't regularly weigh in on personal income tax issues. With the only exception to that being, Tom, is that there have been kind of some proposals in several states to reduce or even eliminate the personal income tax. And when those proposals pop up, we pay attention very closely, because the next question is going to be, if that happens, how would you replace that revenue source? And a lot of the proposals would have an increased tax on business-to-business transactions, which obviously would affect our members. And at the end of the day, we have to look at this somewhat holistically and make sure that that if one of the levers over on the left are flipped, that will affect the levers over on the right as well. So.
Yeah, but isn't it true though that a lot of business, I think 75% or so, is conducted in the form of, you know, partnerships or S corporations?
And I don't dispute those numbers, and I think a lot of those businesses do happen, whether or not those S corps or LLCs are owned by other partnerships, LLCs, S corps, or if they're owned by individuals, or if they're owned by C corporations. Obviously, the tax happens at the ultimate shareholder level, but we only get engaged on items that with respect to corporate income taxation, as well as, you know, sales property, unclaimed property, that type of stuff. But we don't usually engage on individual income tax matters.
Okay, that's very interesting. So anyway, this is kind of a flavor of the kinds of issues that are being followed by COST, which is a national organization based in Washington, D.C., and that's where you are, right, Pat?
That's correct.
Okay, so...
The cherry blossoms are beautiful this time of year, Tom. You have to make it up sometime.
I definitely do. Yeah, you know, today's weather isn't exactly 100% balmy. It's, you know, very overcast and it's kind of icky outside. But you know, we'll have tourist weather return one of these days.
Well, I had the opportunity to visit your fine state last year for the first time, and I gotta say it was beautiful the entire time.
Did the hotels kill you with all the transient accommodations taxes and that kind of thing?
I tried not to pay attention to that and just focused on the positive.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you so much for appearing on Talking Tax. That was Patrick Reynolds, Senior Tax Counsel at the Council on State Taxation or COST. And this is Tom Yamachika, President of the Tax Foundation of Hawaii, signing off. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Wow.
Thank you so much for watching Think Tech Hawaii. If you like what we do, please like us and click the subscribe button on YouTube and the follow button on Vimeo. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and donate to us at thinktechhawaii.com. Mahalo.